Okay, so last week, and I think both of you were not here last week, but so last week we covered David's interaction with Tziva and with Mephibosheth, and then his interaction with Shimi ben Gera when Shimi ben Gera curses David, and then we had the initial advice that Hushai gives to Avshalom, when Hushai deceives Avshalom into allowing him into his camp as an advisor. The theme we had last week was consistently contrasting the arrogance of Avshalom and the arrogance of Shimi with the humility of David, particularly in that Shimi presumes something we've seen. It's been a massive theme throughout our learning, really, that what Shimi wants is what Hashem wants. So Shimi, who's from the family of Shaul, sees David clearly being punished. There's no question, someone who sees the total dramatic turnaround and the collapse of David's position, and not only is he being thrown out of Yerushalayim after having had so much success, but he's being thrown out by his own son. No question that there's something beyond the natural happening here. Shimi ben Gera immediately assumes that it's what he wants Hashem to be doing. He says, ah, I have always held David responsible for the destruction of Shaul's family, of my family, and now I see that Hashem is punishing David for destroying the family of Shaul, right? Which is, 1% correct in that David is being punished, but totally incorrect and as to why it's happening. Now, Shimi has no idea about what happened with Bathsheba and with Uriah HaHiti, and he's totally wrong about the fact that David did nothing wrong to Shaul or to Yonasan or to Ishbosheth or to Avner or to Shaul's other descendants who were murdered by the Givonim later on in Sefer Shmuel. Right? But that arrogance to jump to conclusions that what I want is what I anticipate Hashem is doing. So we had Shimi ben Gera doing that last week, something which was one of the fatal flaws of Shaul HaMelech himself. The exact same mistake is made by Avshalom when Hushai is beginning to manipulate Avshalom, and this week we'll see the manipulation shifted to high gear. But Hushai realizes the way to manipulate Avshalom and the way to deceive him into thinking that he's an honest advisor, right? He walks into the camp, and Avshalom, in probably the most chutzpahdic line in history, says to Hushai, "What are you doing here? Where's your loyalty to your friend?" Like the guy who betrayed his father and wants to murder his own father and take over his kingdom, dares, question someone else's loyalty, strength. So that's impressive by Avshalom, but we don't expect any less. But Hushai immediately says to him, well, I clearly see that you have been selected by the people and you've been selected by Hashem. Hashem clearly wants you to be the king. Well, Avshalom, he eats that up. He doesn't need any real convincing. That's the case. That not only was I born to be king, but that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam had in mind for me as well. He signs up for that, no problem, right? And in stark contrast, we have the reaction of David HaMelech when he was being cursed by Shimi ben Gera. So Avishai ben Tsruya, brother of Yoav, says to David, "Let me cut off the head of that dead dog, that piece of garbage." Literally calls him a dead dog, and David says, "No. I have to assume that he is being sent from Hashem. Maybe he's being sent as a punishment, and maybe this will serve as a kapara form." In other words, David also, part of being a person of faith is trying to see the hand of Hashem in life. Except instead of seeing the hand of Hashem in doing what he wants, right, and advancing his own cause, David sees, and he's not 100% sure, he sees punishment to himself, right? He sees Hashem responding to him, not advancing his own cause, and hoping that this will be a kapara. He doesn't say for sure, he doesn't say, well, I just have to have, 5, 10, 15 rocks thrown at me, and that'll be enough. That with my supernatural insight will I've decided will use up the punishment debt that I have. Says, maybe I'll be forgiven, maybe I won't. You have that humility in stark contrast with the arrogance of his enemies. And now, as we shift cutscene, really the learning this week is going to focus on Avshalom. I think we'll learn more about Avshalom's personality from this parak than maybe anything that we've seen before. David is going to fade into the background. We're going to see that arrogance really being a fatal flaw in Avshalom and in his supporters. Right? So the previous parak ended with Achitofel giving the really evil advice to Avshalom to rape the 10 Pilag Shim of David, which Achitofel said, Rashi explained, would be politically advantageous because all the people are not sure if Avshalom is really willing to go through with this or not. Is the son really willing to burn bridges with the father? You know, people are going to hesitate to throw their lot in with Avshalom. 1 minute later, if Avshalom flip-flops and goes back to David, you know, they'll be on the outs. David will forgive his son. He's probably not going to forgive the people who rebelled against him and joined his son. So Achitofel says, look, once you do this, once you assault the 10 Pilag Shim, there's no going back. That burns your bridges. And now that will make the people realize that you mean business. You know, it's the kind of classic Achitofel advice, which tactically is brilliant. Morally, it's bankrupt. I think it's the Dat Mikra, but definitely a couple of the modern Mefarshim suggest that, yeah, the Dat Mikra does make this suggestion, that it actually may backfire on Avshalom. You know, one parak, we're going to see David, who left Yerushalayim with like this handful of followers, all of a sudden have an army. And the question is, where does the army come from? So we'll see a couple of reasons for that, but they suggest that one reason may be that Avshalom really alienates some of the people by raping David's Pilag Shim. I mean, this is the person who first rose to prominence by taking that very principled moral stance after Amnon assaulted his own sister. And he said that was something that was totally unforgivable. And now he turns around and he does the same exact things, exact same thing himself. Okay. But Achitofel gives another piece of advice here. And the advice he gives here is one which unquestionably is dead on. So what does Achitofel say to Avshalom? So he says, let me choose 12,000 men. And I'll go after David tonight, right? I'll go personally after David tonight. He's going to be tired and exhausted. He just left Yerushalayim. And I'll go and I'll flush him out. I'm going to kill just the king. And then I'll bring everyone back to you. Everyone else is going to have peace. So the core suggestion Achitofel made, and Rabag just points this out nicely, is that the only reason there is any opposition to Avshalom is because of one man only, and that is David HaMelech. So if I can take out David, that will end the war. Right, the Rabag, we can have a bloodless coup, or an almost bloodless coup. We don't need to have a war, doesn't need to be huge fighting. We just need to take out David. It's accurate in terms of analyzing the strategic picture. He's correct in evaluating David's position right now. The Radak points out there's another point of symbolism here, which will be helpful for Avshalom, which is, why is it specifically 12,000 men? Well, the Radak says it's going to be 1,000 from every Shevet. And the Dat Mikra takes it one step further, but it's not hard to think this connection. Last time we had an army of 12,000 men was when Moshe sent the 12,000 men to fight against Midian. And it was clear in that case. We're choosing this because it's like a national unity army, right? We don't even need 12,000 men. We just need a special operations force. But the message here is going to be, from beginning to end, Achitofel's whole idea, this is a cause of unity. My goal is to unite the people behind Avshalom. And so to do that, number one, we just need to take out David. Number two, we don't want to take out anyone else. Last thing you want, if you want, look, you're going to fight a whole big civil war, right? The North, in the American Civil War. So we won the Civil War. It was 4 years of terrible fighting. What happened afterwards? How long did Reconstruction go on? How long did it take to actually move on past the scars of the Civil War? Decades and decades and decades, right? So a Civil War may be helpful in the short term for you winning, but if the goal is actually being king, you do not want to do that. So just kill David, do not have the war, Kol Ha'am Yeh B'Shalom, and by getting the army to be a national army, right? That's the whole goal here. Who is Avshalom the king of? He's not the king of one Shevet. He's not the king of another Shevet. All the Shvatim have united behind Avshalom. That is the vision, the brilliant vision that Achitofel is presenting. The Malbim has another suggestion over here for he says, you know, what's going to happen? Why is it so important to ask the Malbim for Achitofel to be the one to lead the army? And Achitofel didn't say have Avshalom lead the army. He said, I'll go. I'll grab a few men. I'll grab 12,000 men. We'll run out tonight. And by the end of the night, the job will be done. But why can't Avshalom do it himself? So Abarbanel suggests, and this is part of Abarbanel's running commentary on Avshalom, and we're kind of using it as a running foil the whole way through. Abarbanel suggests that Achitofel was not so confident that that Avshalom would follow through. Said, first of all, okay, we'll keep him safe. Lo yistakein. Let's keep Avshalom safe. I'm not sure how compelling that is, because the whole idea is that David is basically undefended. So that's one suggestion that Barbanel makes. Second suggestion he makes is Kidei Shelo Yirachem Al Aviv. Right? He doesn't trust. Push comes to shove. What's Avshalom going to do? Will he actually kill his father? Would he have mercy? This is a Barbanel's theory, that Avshalom would have loved to be king, but without having to kill David. Okay? We'll see. We'll see if that suggestion really holds up to scrutiny in the next few seconds. But the Malbim has a third suggestion. He says, why did Achitofel want to go by himself? It wasn't to keep Avshalom safe. And it wasn't to make sure that he did the deed, even though Malbim is also sympathetic to Abarbanel's theory. But the Malbim says, no, it's also to further the political cause. Because he says, what's going to happen? He says, if there is going to be a war, there's going to be a reaction, right? We've talked about this in the past. At some point, after all the enthusiasm and the being carried away in the moment, once people calm down, they're going to reflect and realize that this really was a pretty ugly story, right? David really did a lot for Klal Yisrael. He's really a pretty impressive king. And once the simmering, once the resentment of the moment goes away and people are left with Avshalom, realize this is really pretty gross. What we have now, we have a king who murdered his own father so that he was so power hungry that he wanted the throne. Like, ugh. So Avshalom, if he's the one who leads the army, suggests the Malbim, that's going to hamstring him long term. So rather, what's the plan? He says, what's going to happen? If Achitofel does it, plausible deniability. Avshalom can say, I sent the special operations troops to just scatter David's army, chase him away. I never planned on David being killed. That wasn't part of the plan, right? He could deny that was the plan. Avshalom, yechara apo. Avshalom can make a whole big show that he was very, very angry. I never wanted David to die. All the people feel bad about David having been killed. Avshalom can say, I was with you. And then what's going to happen? This is like brilliant. Now, how's Achitofel going to come back? Presumably Achitofel doesn't want to destroy his own career. What's going to happen? Avshalom will issue a general amnesty. All the people who supported David, you know, Itai Achiti and Yoav ben Tsruya and Avishai and Barzi, all the people who support David, in this very magnanimous gesture, he'll say, look, this should be a uniting moment for the people, right? Let's just move on. Let's move on past the past. We want a united future. So rather than revenge and recriminations and staying in the past of the David Avshalom civil war, let's just move on. Let's forgive everybody. And in the course of forgiving Yoav and Avishai and Ittai and all the David supporters, who will be included in the general amnesty? Achitofel as well. I will also be invited. I will also be able to go home. So I think it's a spectacular suggestion. It's really brilliant. All right, so you put it all together, and Achitofel is someone who has his eye on the ball. What is the end game? And that's really not something to underrate. What do we see here from Achitophel? His greatest strength, when Chazal talk about when the Psukim described his wisdom, his advice, as if it came from a Navi, that is because what's the trademark of a Navi? The Navi can tell you what's going to happen in the future. What do Chazal say about the Chacham? Who is the wise man? Izo Chacham, Haroa es Hanola. Achitophel is able to play things out and is able to see, if I do X, what is going to happen? You know, Y, Z, so on and so forth. So he's able to sit here now and say, what is the goal that I want? And that's not something to take for granted, right? So often when people are in the middle of a war, they are not thinking of the political endgame. That's what happened to the United States when we invaded Iraq, right? We knew we wanted to get rid of Saddam, but we didn't really have much of a plan for what was going to happen afterwards, right? I was all the time, much easier said than done. Achitophel is one who is not locked in on the civil war per se, on the fight per se. He is focused on how to create a viable, united kingdom for Avshalom. And the advice is totally brilliant. Now the question is, how is Hushai going to undermine him? And what Hushai does is fantastic. It's a little bit funny. So you see here, I color-coded some. I probably should have chosen different colors, like purple and blue. I apologize about that. Those are kind of similar. But you see that I color-coded a bunch of the text. We'll see why we did that in a second. So first, we should notice, it seems like Avshalom is not totally enthusiastic about Achitophel's advice. If he was, if he realized it was the best advice ever, he wouldn't have asked for someone else for his opinion. Right? So Hushai realizes he has this opportunity, and he realizes he needs to do anything to turn Avshalom away, because otherwise David's a dead man. He needs to buy time for David. So he begins Pasuk Zion. Well, we should read some of this inside. He says, Lo tava itza sheri atzachitofel bapam azos. This advice is not good. Okay, so what's Hushai doing off the bat? He's saying, generally speaking, I'm on Achitophel's side, right? This is not an Achitophel versus Hushai rivalry over here. Usually, Achitophel is 100% correct, but this time he's wrong. Then the Pasuk Ches begins, Vayomer Hushai. That's a little strange because Pasuk Zion began, Vayomer Hushai, right? So whenever you have this in Tanakh, whenever you have person A spoke, and then again person A spoke, that means that there is a silence, right, between the two speaking. So if we're trying to imagine what's happening in the room over here, so Hushai is building suspense. What he's going to do is he's going to give a very dramatic speech. You know, you call this the power pause, right? You say something, you let the tension build, and then everyone's focused, and then you begin. So it's an oration that Hushai is about to have. So he gets up, and the first thing he says, I was like, ooh, that's interesting. What does he mean by that? Right, sounded pretty good to me, right? So rather than just launch in, Hushai uses drama. He uses charisma. He uses all of the tricks and the special effects. What Hushai is going to do, what's perfect about this, is he uses all of Avshalom's weapons against him. Avshalom used all of his charisma to manipulate the people. And now Hushai is going to pull out some of the exact same tricks to manipulate Avshalom himself, manipulating the manipulator. And let's see how he really does it. So Hushai, and look how long Hushai's speech is, right? He's going to go on and on and on and on. What is this, like a 6 long psukim? And the psukim are long too, right? I'm just going to scroll up for a second. Let's remember, what was Achitophel's advice? Achitophel spoke for... it was 3 psukim, right? It was really 2.5 psukim, chick-chock. And there were no extra words in Achitophel's advice. Achitophel was not giving a speech. He was not putting on a show. Achitophel is a man of business, right? I have a brain. I use my brain. That's why I'm in the room. I'm here because I'm the genius. That's why he invited me here. So let me tell you what to do, and that's it. We have 12,000 men. We'll go tonight. He's tired. We'll get him. We'll kill him. Game's over. Done. Stands up, sits down. The whole speech took like 1.5 minutes, right? Hushai goes on and on and on and on, this whole long delivery. And he says, Atay data savicha v'asanasha. You know your father and his men. Kigiborim hema umari nafesh hema. They're mighty and they're bitter of soul. Kido shakul basadat. Fantastic image, right? They're desperate like a bear who's just been bereft of her children out in the field. Bit of irony there because, you know, David has lost his son, but that's because his son is rebelling against him. Your father is a man of war. So the purples, and you see how many of these are. Hushai is going to spend many, many phrases talking about how mighty and dangerous an enemy David is. Right? They're Giborim, Mari Nefesh, Ishmael Chama. He continues, he's a Ben Chayil, right? His army are Bnei Chayil. Again, he's going to say he's a Gibor over and over and over again. Hushai talks up how strong and mighty and bitter and dangerous David and his men are. Why is he doing that? Second thing you'll notice that Hushai does is Hushai uses many figures. There's a lot of imagery, a lot of simile here, right? David is like a bereft bear in the field. David is like Libo Kalev Aryeh, right? His heart is like the heart of a lion. What are you going to do? What's the advice that Hushai gives? He says, we want to gather a whole massive army. Not 12,000 men, but we want all of Bnei Yisrael. But he doesn't just say all of Bnei Yisrael. He says, Ki Ya'atzti, here's my advice. Another dramatic moment. I propose, after three psukim of describing the danger, Yasof Yasef Alecha, Kol Yisrael Midan Va'ad Be'er Sheva Kechol Al Hayam, Asher Layam, Larov. Which is great. A tremendous army. As masses, as numberless as the sand on the sea. Oh, this is like the brisbane of a sarim. That's like a nevuah. I mean, what's Hushai doing, right? You don't talk like this. It's not normal conversation over here. He's playing up the drama of the moment, right? And more, he says, what's going to happen? If we find David, so we'll oppose him. V'lo nosarbo mikol anashim ashreito gam echad. Not one man will be left alive. Another exaggerated phrase. If they go into a city, the enemy city, so what we do, v'sachavru sa'ar ha'nachal, we'll take the city down brick by brick. We'll take the bricks out into the valley. Asher lo nimtza sham tzuror. Not a stone will be left of the valley. Right? The Radak says, derech guzma. So all this exaggeration, all of the similes and figures of speech over here, all of the dramatic turns of phrase, all of the playing up the danger of David. What is Hushai trying to get here? Hushai realizes that Avshalom, his primary interest is not being the king, right? Achitofel's vision is Avshalom as the king of a secure, peaceful, the best way to be the king, he'll be ruling a nice, peaceful government. Avshalom is motivated by one thing only, ego, right? And doesn't want to be king for the sake of being king. That's what Achitofel thinks. Avshalom wants to be king for the sake of trying to slake his own ego. And Hushai realizes that. And Hushai realizes the massive opening that Achitofel has left for him. There is nothing in Achitofel's plan to gratify Avshalom's ego. There's no heroism. There's no excitement. There's no glory. There's nothing even for Avshalom to do. He's going to stay home. He'll go to bed and he'll wake up in the morning with a note that David is dead and he's now the king. He doesn't really care about that. What's the vision that Hushai presents to Avshalom? A titanic, heroic struggle. The enemy is fierce. The enemy is strong. The enemy is mighty. The enemy is desperate. Who do we need at the head of the army? Not Avshalom, not Achitofel, not Hushai. Panacha hochim bakrav. Avshalom, we need you at the head of the army. We need a massive army. Midan va'Be'er Sheva. The whole nation comes together. Avshalom is at the lead. All the people behind him fighting in this heroic battle between the desperate, dangerous David and the brave, heroic, glorious Avshalom. It is an image which caters to Avshalom's ego. And that is the weakness that Hushai is able to zero in on and manipulate like crazy. right? The other piece, which is really telling about Avshalom's personality, and it's the other piece that Achitofel just misses. Again, strategically speaking, Achitofel is 100% correct and Hushai 100% wrong. But politically, Hushai understands who he's talking to much better. And Hushai realizes, I think it's pretty clear from what he says, that the Abarbanel's read of Avshalom is not what we should think about. Besides not liking Achitofel's advice because it doesn't leave him a role, the idea of a peaceful end to the battle does not get Avshalom excited. Right? Avshalom is a bloodthirsty killer. Yes, we saw him kill Amnon. We saw David have no hesitation believing that Avshalom had wiped out every single one of his brothers. We saw Avshalom recklessly burning Yoav's field. Next week, Yoav is going to yell at David that Avshalom would have been very happy to kill every single one of us. And I think that Hushai also realizes that the blood is something that appeals to Avshalom. He likes the idea of killing. He likes the idea of destroying his enemies. The proposal, the vision that Achitofel presents of just taking out David and nothing else happening doesn't get Avshalom excited. What gets Avshalom excited? The vision of the lo nosar bo. Oh, I should have purpled this also, right? We'll fall upon him like the dew on the ground. Now that's how vast our army will be. We'll settle on them like the dew on the ground. Another one of the similes over here. Lo nosar bo mikol anashim asher yitog le'amecha. We're not just gonna kill David. We're not just gonna kill Yoav. We're not just gonna kill Abishai. We're gonna kill any single person who supported David. Avshalom hears that idea. Avshalom likes that idea. And then Hushai, one pasuk more. Not just enough to describe the graphic massacre of his enemies. Now, last week we had Shimi Begeira throwing rocks at David, and David just ignores and goes on. Here, anybody who dared oppose Avshalom has to be killed. And the city that hosts David, it's not just enough to defeat the city. It's not just enough to invade the city. We need to destroy that city all the way down to the foundation, right? It's like the Parak in Tehillim, Aru ad hayasodba. We're going to completely uproot everything. Lo nimsa sham tsuroi. So it is Avshalom's total narcissism and Avshalom's bloodlust, which Hushai, those two weaknesses that Hushai is able to wedge into, to undo, to destroy Avshalom. Because this is going to be the end. What happens? Avshalom v'chol Yesh Yisrael tovas tova atas Hushai arki me'atas Achitofel. Now, Rav Bazak Mivyam, I think it's Rav Bazak, has an interesting suggestion. He has an interesting diak over here as to who liked whose advice. Right, when it came to Achitofel's advice, so what did the Navi say? Nishar davar b'nei Avshalom u'b'nei kol ziknei Yisrael. And it was the elders, it was the more senior, august leaders who liked what Achitofel had to say. He suggests, who likes Hushai's advice? It was kol ish Yisrael. And it was the younger people. We think of what when Rechavam has his mistake. He doesn't listen to the young, to the old seasoned advisors. He listens to the younger people, right? So he suggests the same thing is happening here with Avshalom. The more mature advice was approved of by the Zakenim. The more exciting advice was approved of by the Kol Ish Yisrael, and Avshalom goes with that. And the Navi tells us, "Vashem tiva laferes hatachi topla tova la'avor avi Hashem al Avshalom es hara." We should know that this is ultimately coming min Hashemayim. But like everything in Sefer Shmuel, right? The way Hashkacha works, it's not just like Hashem hardening Paro's heart over here. Of course, it's from min Hashemayim, but it's also Avshalom has bechir chashas over here. It is his own weaknesses which is leading to him making this choice. Okay. So the rest of the parak here moves pretty quickly. We won't go into so much of the super in detail. But Hushai realizes, he doesn't want to take this for granted. You never know if Avshalom is going to change his mind, which tells us, Achitofel's advice is so superior to Hushai's own advice. And he realizes we cannot take a chance because Avshalom is liable to change his mind at any moment. And so therefore, Hushai realizes he has to send word to David immediately to flee, to cross the Jordan River. So they send Yonasan and Achimaatz, who are the sons of Eviasar and Tzadok. Remember, David sent Eviasar and Tzadok back to Yerushalayim. He said, I don't need to have the Aron with me. Even if I do not have the Aron Kodesh in physical proximity, I still can have Hashem with me. So Yonasan, so Tzadok and Eviasar are back in Yerushalayim. They're serving also as contacts for David. So they send their sons, Yonasan and Achimaatz. The way the Navi describes it is, it's almost like a Mission Impossible. The question is, why on earth do we care about any of what happens over here? It's a very exciting story. There, the spies are trying to get to David. Well, the Navi tells us, Vayarasam Nare Agela Avshalom. So Avshalom gets word. There are spies, you know, Yonasan and Achimaatz are bringing word to David. They chase after them. The spies hide in a well in Bachurim. And Rashi quotes an interesting medrash that they hide in the well of the wife of Shimi ben Gera because there's the woman from Bachurim. Bachurim, the only man we know from Bachurim is Shimi. So Chazal suggests that Shimi may have hated David, but his wife knew better, as is the case many times. She hides them in the well. She sends them on a wild goose chase. Then they're able to escape and they get to David and tell David to cross the Jordan River. Question is, why? It's fun. If this was an action movie, it would be great. But all these psukim, what exactly is it coming to teach us other than a way to get, you know, kids to learn the story to be excited? So I think what Anavi probably wants to draw out of here, I think the Tam Mikra and Rav Bazak both draw this similarity, but definitely Rav Bazak takes it in a different direction. There are many similarities between, oh, hey, this week's Haftarah, between what's happening here with Yonas and Achimaatz and the story of the two spies who Yehoshua sends into Yericho. Right. You have two spies who come. The enemy knows that they're there. They are hidden by a woman. Rachav hides the spies under some flax on her roof, and the woman from Bachurim hides them under some grain in her well. The soldiers come. She sends the soldiers on a wild goose chase. Then she lets the two spies go. The two spies go back to camp, and the camp crosses the Jordan River. Right, many parallels here. Okay, why? So Rav Bazak suggests, this is one approach, that this is being done to emphasize the punishment that David is still enduring, and the whole process of Avshalom's civil war is punishment for David. And so one way to think of this is that David, this is the process of him losing the kingship, right? That's the punishment for what happens with Uriah and Bathsheba. And so we have the whole story of Yehoshua and the Meraglim as they come into Eretz Yisrael. And now we have the exact same story being run back, except it's with David being forced to leave Eretz Yisrael, right? He's crossing the exact same river, just he's crossing it in the other direction. But especially under the fact that, what was it, 2 minutes ago, or one pasuk ago, that the Navi told us that Hashem is on David's side over here, Hashem tziva la'feres atas achitofel atova. So I think that we should look at the parallels in a different direction. And we're going to see next week a similar theme over here. That the Navi is not trying to contrast David with Yehoshua. It's linking David with Yehoshua. Then at first glance, indeed, it seems like this is a collapse. He is being forced out of Eretz Yisrael. And as we dig deeper, the Navi is saying, no. Hashem is with him. What was the whole point of the story of the Meraglim with Yericho? Right? What was the message that Rachav told the men? Well, they summed it up. They came back to Yehoshua, and the spies said, "Kinasan Hashem biyadenu es kol haaretz v'gam nemuv kol yoshei haaretz lipaneinu." We see from our mission that Hashem is with us. Well, the Navi has just told us here that once again Hashem is with David. We have the beginning of the reconquest of Eretz Yisrael. We're going to see in the war next week, this theme is going to come back a couple of times in really three different ways. This being the first one, the Navi is going to link David with Yehoshua. The tables have already turned, and now we're going to have David, once again, the leader coming in to conquer Eretz Yisrael, of course, with Yehoshua's from the Canaanim, and with David, it's from his own son. That's not great. But a fundamental point is that Yericho militarily was stronger than Yehoshua. Their walls were impregnable. David, likewise, militarily does not stand a chance against Avshalom. You ask 10 out of 10 military analysts, they'll tell you Avshalom should win. But ultimately, in both cases, it doesn't matter. The person, the leader who's going to become the master of Eretz Yisrael is the one who Hashem wants to take over Eretz Yisrael. And that was Yehoshua hundreds of years ago. And that's going to be David HaMelech over here. Okay, so just a couple of points to close quickly. So Pasuk Chaf Gimel tells us that Achitofel sees that his advice was not accepted. So immediately he goes home. He gives his last will and testament to his family. And he strangles himself, commits suicide, and he's buried in the kever of his father. Right? So Chazal say that why Lachitovel do this, and the Malbim sums it up mostly, except the Malbim adds one important point. Achitofel, once again, the Chacham Haroa es Hanola. He sees that his advice has not been accepted, and he now knows that Avshalom is doomed. The Malbim suggests, the Abar Benel suggested this as well. I put the Malbim on the sheet, excuse me, because there's only three lines instead of 10 lines. But that Achitofel realizes that Hashem is on David's side. Achitofel says, my advice was the best advice possible. I know that more than anybody. I know, I can see into the future. Hashem gave me a brain that I can see the future like a Navi, right? It's another example of someone who has just a skill beyond anyone else. Now he says, I see it must be Hashem is on David's side, or politically, if you don't go in that direction, I see that if he's not going with me, there's no hope long term, and therefore there is no hope, and I might as well kill myself. This way, I'm not going to be executed as a traitor. I can be buried with my family. My estate will be transferred to my family, and rather than be forfeit to the king. So Achitofel gives up. The fantastic irony, though, I haven't really seen Mefarshim pick up on this, but I think it's very clear, is what would have happened if Achitofel stuck with Avshalom. Achitofel didn't kill himself. Well, one parak later, we come back to learning next week, David is going to be hammering home again and again and again an obsessive message of mercy. David does not want Avshalom killed. The general of Avshalom's army is David's own nephew, Amasa, Avshalom's first cousin. And far from punishing Amasa with death or exile or anything, David is going to promote him and make him general of his own army. David is going to have a total policy of forgiveness for everybody involved in Avshalom's rebellion. Shimi ben Gera is going to be forgiven. Amasa is going to be forgiven. He's going to forgive Avshalom himself. It seems very reasonable that had Achitofel not given up hope, David actually would have forgiven him as well, right? But by anticipating and seeing the future and saying, I know what's going to happen down the road and there is no hope and I might as well kill myself to protect at least my money for my family, Achitofel just destroys himself, right? We had the total hope of David last week. He didn't see the future, but he saw hope. Maybe Hashem is going to turn around. Maybe Hashem is on my side. Maybe Hashem is going to forgive me and give me kapara. I don't know that for sure, but I have to have hope that that's going to be the case, and that's what's going to keep me going every day. Achitofel, who's able to see the future, that vision of the future ends up destroying him. And it's just another example, right? Chazal said, Shimshon was destroyed by his strength. Avshalom is going to be destroyed by his looks. Achitofel is destroyed here by his wisdom. Okay, the parak ends with a nice point. I want to get into this a little bit more next week, talk about who these people are. But David crosses the Jordan River. And the last point for tonight is that he comes to the place of Machanayim. Okay, he comes to the city of Machanayim on the other side of the Jordan River. And then all of a sudden, so some people come to him. Shovi ben Nachash, Machir Amriel, Barzillai Giladi, they come with supplies and support and desperately needed things for David. So what the one thing the Navi is doing here is that it's drawing on another parallel. And it's been, right, this is a pervasive theme in David HaMelech's life. One person the Navi has linked David to time and time again has been Yaakov Avinu. And we see that here as well. Because when did Machanayim get its name? Why is Machanayim called Machanayim? It's a town on the other side of the Jordan River. And Yaakov, when Yaakov left Lavan, and all of a sudden, the moment of Vayifku Ubo Malachei Elokim, right, he sees the Malachim coming to him as he leaves Lavan, as he prepares to meet Esav. That moment, that strength, that chizuk that Yaakov drew upon when he came to Machanayim, and all of a sudden he sees all the Malachim coming to him, right? That was Yaakov's point of chizuk as he's running away from Haran and he's facing the coming fight with Esav. Once again here, the same exact thing is happening. David is in the place, Machanayim, he's in the place where Yaakov had seen those Malachim. Now, it's not supporters of, you know, it's not angelic supporters, it's people of flesh and blood, but it's the same phenomenon, right? David is he's been running away. Now he's facing the coming battle against Avshalom. And all of a sudden, miraculously, seemingly, at this place, he has people coming from all over to bring him the desperately needed food and supplies, right? So we have the hope and the things turning around for David HaMelech, even as the arrogance and the the real narcissism and bloodlust of Avshalom have led him to his coming destruction, and the arrogance of Achitophel, his total ability to see the future, you know, that's already destroyed him in this parak, and it's going to destroy Avshalom in the next. So we'll have any thoughts left to hear, but otherwise we'll break, and looking forward to more learning next week.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Travels.
Thanks so much. All right. Bye.